It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine.
Are we on?
Yeah, it's not very loud. Yeah, it's not very loud, though.
With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General
That's
Manager
not very loud at all.
Of the State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes.
We're going to
finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93 is the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, Lavinia is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushion Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
That's right.
All right.
That snuck up on me. I didn't know we were almost on there.
Yeah, I heard the countdown was very, very low, and when the audio came on, I said, okay, it's still low. What's going on? So I adjusted the volume the first time, and it got real loud and distorted. Then I backed it down a little bit. So
I played with mine, too, and it blasted out.
I just could barely hear it, and I could barely hear the countdown. Normally, you hear the countdown over... You know, I was talking before the show starts. That's kind of strange. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year! Yay!
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah,
that's okay. Mm-hmm. Hope everyone had a great holiday.
Wow. I think they're still partying. I had to shut the window. So, that's wonderful. Happy 2012 to everybody out there. It is whatever day in January, Thursday.
Fifth.
I'm looking at the fifth. That's what I meant. Yes, January the fifth.
This is the 11th day of the 12 days of Christmas.
It is?
Yes, I believe so. I think January the sixth is the 12th day of Christmas.
Really? I thought the 12 days were before Christmas.
No, I think isn't the 12 days of Christmas the 12th day is when the wise men arrived.
That's a different chapter. Hold on a second. Let me go back to it. 12 days on the 6th day, 5 golden rings, no, hold on, wise men, I don't know if you can hear the paper shuffling, but I'm just using random
dates.
Okay, good. I don't know, I just thought the 12 days of Christmas, now you got me confused. So people were getting 12 different things after Christmas?
Yes, the 12 days of Christmas is started on Christmas Day. The 12th day of Christmas. Am I not right? I'll ask my engineer. Oh, my engineer doesn't know. Yeah, I always understood that the 12 days of Christmas was the 12th day after Christmas, and that's when the wise men arrived.
Okay, well.
I may be wrong. I
thought it was before, because when you say, like, it's a quarter of nine, which I hate using that, a quarter of nine, why can't you just say it's 15 till?
Yeah.
Of is before. Yeah, so I'm thinking it's before. I don't know. Let me look that up.
I don't know. That's...
I'm going into research mode.
You can.
No. I have. Yes.
We will find that out before the program's over.
I hope so.
Yes. No, I don't know. Well, whatever. It is the 5th of January. We do know that.
Yes. It is the 5th.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Busby. You opened the window a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Just to feel the breeze.
But yeah, my time here, it snuck up on me. It
It still shows that I have like a minute 27 left before we come on air.
Really?
It
doesn't show red on air yet?
Oh, it shows on air, but it's just counting down. It didn't start counting up. So that's one of the reasons why time snuck up on me, too. I just...
Did you just want to can tonight's show and try it again next week?
No, we got a guest.
Yeah, we do have a guest.
We have a guest, yeah.
That would not be good to say, we couldn't call you because we got confused with our timing, so we figured out.
We just end the show.
Wait until
we
next
have to
time.
Look up 12 days of Christmas, you know.
Yes. Special. I will get right on that. Tonight we are starting the new year. We are in the O's still of the United States wines. It's the first show of the new year, and we're discussing the wine industry in the U.S., and we're on to Oregon. And I believe specifically Southern Oregon, and
yep.
We do have a guest for tonight. So coming up in about 15 or so minutes.
Right.
That'll be cool. Thank you all for joining us.
Leading into that, we're going to be talking about Oregon itself and particularly Southern Oregon and stuff like that and giving you a little background on Oregon. But we will be in Oregon for probably 3-4 weeks or maybe even longer. It depends on a lot of wineries in Oregon. What did I, 425, I think I mentioned before we went on air. So hopefully we will have more guests than we can accommodate. But not tonight. We've only got one tonight. So,
okay. Yeah, just whenever you're ready for the 12 days of Christmas, I've got it.
You got the information? All right.
The festive days beginning Christmas Day, December 25th. It's also known as Christmastide and Twelvetide. The 12th night of Christmas is always on the evening of the 5th of January.
Oh, so it's this evening.
Hmm. The 12th day can either precede or follow the 12th night according to which Christian tradition is followed. So it can be today or it could be
tomorrow.
Yesterday. Yeah, something. Okay, good.
Yeah, tomorrow.
So wow, that's interesting. I always thought it was before. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's when the wise men arrived. I think that's they didn't make it there the day of the birth. They came 12 days after, and then they brought the presents, and that's why we all give presents now, because the wise men gave presents.
They got stuck in traffic because all the people were going back up north.
Exactly.
Oh. That's right. I-75, where's – yeah, right here. Yeah, the wise men got stuck in traffic on Interstate 75. Is
exactly. Yeah.
There
I
you
can
go.
Believe it. I can believe it.
We're good. Anybody listening right now, it's just, boy, I can see the complaints coming in now.
Yes.
I tuned in for this.
Yeah.
No,
listening for why.
Yes. Yeah. So you're actually drinking, what did you say, a Sutter Home?
Sutter Home Moscato. Sutter Home Moscato. Nice wine, really. I mean, Moscato grapes is a nice grape. Sutter Home makes a decent one. They really do. It's a good varietal characteristic of the Moscato grape. It's sweet. Not overpoweringly sweet, just a nice, pleasant, sweeter style wine, white wine. We've talked about the Moscato grape in previous programs. If you dig out on archives, you can find it in there. But the Moscato grape is a nice, clean, white grape made in usually a sweeter style, though some places make it a little bit lighter style, a little bit less sweet, a little bit fruitier, pulling out the sweetness. Sutter Home, I like their Moscato. It's a nice break from some heavy reds and stuff, and it's not so overpoweringly sweet that you cringe. It's not as sweet as Ice Vines or any of that. It's got a sweetness type of a muscadine grape. For those of you out there who are muscadine drinkers, it's got the sweetness of a muscadine, but not the aftertaste of a muscadine. The muscadine is said to have a foxy aftertaste, and the Moscato doesn't seem to have that. So it's nice grape. It's a nice wine. My time is off on my streaming time. That's
okay.
Nuts, because every time I look up at it, it's still like in the same time realm. I don't know. But
we'll go by your PC clock, I guess, because it's
that's 7:02 though. So the
7:09
that's some everything. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oregon.
Oregon.
Yeah.
My engineer said, all right, keep it going, guys. Keep it going. there you go.
There you go.
Oregon. We're in Oregon tonight. Let me, as always, always like to start talking about Oregon and telling you a little bit about the state and the counties and the roads and rivers and stuff like that, the elevation and all. So let's start out with the counties. The counties are 36 counties in Oregon, going from a lot of small ones in the northwest. Northwest, a lot of small counties out there. Portland's quite a ways inland, too. It always amazes me how far inland Portland really is from the actual coast of Oregon. It's really quite a ways up the river. Columbia, St. Helens is before Portland. Portland is like three counties in, which is, like I say, it always tends to surprise me how far it is. But most of the smaller counties in the northwest, you get down in the southeast, and the counties are enormous. They just spread out all over the place. They were that way for years and years, and they just continue to be quite spread out in all those areas there. So the counties, 36 counties in the state of Oregon. The Oregon altitude goes from sea level, which is the Pacific Ocean, along the west coast, and also the altitude is rather small on the northern boundary of the state because of the rivers coming down through there. The highest place, highest point in Oregon is Mount Hood at 11,239 feet. So it's quite a ways up there, quite a difference in the altitude in the state. Most of the wineries are located on the western part of the state because of the altitude. It's going to the eastern part of the state, the mountains over there. Major rivers all run west into the Pacific Ocean or north and then hit rivers and flow into the west. So that's most of the rivers you're going to find in the state are that way. There's a few of them that will run east. Continental Divide does it's the mountain range, send some of the mountains to the east a little bit, which down through the Snake River and into the Snake River. So there are some that way. The highways, major highways in Oregon, is Interstate 84, comes out of pretty much central Oregon, but then it heads right straight north and runs along the northern edge going through Portland. And it ends in Portland, actually. I-5 coming out of California, going up pretty much on the western part of the state and into Portland and then on up into Washington State. Quite a few smaller federal highways running around, but not the interstates, only two major interstates. There's a couple, three smaller branches of the interstates around and bypasses and stuff. But mostly two of them, 84 and 5. 5 goes right through Salem into Portland, and that is one of the big wine-growing regions there. So I-5 goes to the wine-growing region there. Also, I-5 in the southern part of southwest part of Oregon goes through Ashland and Grants Pass and Medford and Jacksonville, that area there, which is the area we're covering tonight with Oregon. It's quite a I-5 runs through quite a few of the wine regions of Oregon, since it is on the western part of the state. Oregon, let me click on this here and get up what I need. State of Oregon, wine areas in Oregon. It's established many years ago. Some of the first wines were made back in the 1840s. Settlers came over and they were making, planting grapes and making wine in Oregon as far back as 1840. Prohibition, pretty much as it did throughout this entire country, kill wine making and wineries. But then Oregon started to pick it up again in the 60s with commercial wineries. They continued to grow from there. American viticulture areas There are quite a few of them, actually, in the state of Oregon. Now, I'm not going to cover them all because we will be talking about other areas and all that. But there are, excuse me, there are three main ones in Oregon. Two of them, which is probably they are the only two that are wholly contained within the boundaries of Oregon, are Willamette Valley AVA, which is in the northern part between Portland and Eugene, Salem, right basically in the middle of it. And then the Southern Oregon AVA, which is wholly contained in the southern part of the state, and that's where we will be tonight and probably next week too, I think, because there's a couple of people I'm going to get a hold of next week. The Southern Oregon AVA was formed by joining two existing AVAs together, one of them being the Rogue Valley AVA and the other one being the Umpqua. I think that's pronounced Umpqua Valley, U-M-P-Q-U-A, Umpqua Valley AVA. And then there's a small strip between the two of them that they've encompassed, but it's not really good for growing anything. It's really a mountainous region. They don't really plant anything there, but they just sort of included that in it because they wanted to join the two together. This AVA of the southern region was established in 2004 by joining the two together. This way they can market themselves together as the Southern Oregon AVA. The Umpqua Valley AVA contains drainage basin of the Umpqua River, excluding obviously the mountain regions. It has a warmer climate than the Willamette Valley to the north, but it is cooler than the Rogue Valley, which is the one that we'll be in tonight, we'll be talking about. The grapes growing here, the Pinot Noir, and to a smaller amount, Pinot Gris, Cabernet, Chardonnays, Rieslings, and a lot of French hybrids. A couple of subregions in here, the Red Valley, Douglas County AVA, and the Oregon AVA, which is the state AVA. And then the Rogue Valley AVA. This includes the drainage basins of the Rogue Valley. And it's three main tributaries, the Illinois River, the Applegate River, and the Bear Creek. These are found all draining into Rogue River, which is just the Rogue River region. This area consists of about 70 miles wide or 110 kilometers wide, 60 miles long, 100 kilometers long, and there's a lot of this land within this AVA that is not suitable for grape cultivation, but instead of just zigzagging it around like they do with political boundaries, they just included the whole area. There are 48, 50 some odd, I'm not sure exactly. The map or the list I showed was saying only 32, but I think that was as of 2009, so there's quite a few more than then. And a very small acreage planted in this area. The westernmost Illinois River Valley is the coolest and wettest. The Bear Creek Valley is the warmest and driest. Each of the three rivers has a unique microclimate, so they're all a little bit different there. Although overall, this AVA, the Rogue Valley AVA, on Southern Oregon AVA is the warmest region of Oregon's, warmest and driest of Oregon's grape growing regions. So they do quite a few warm weather grapes here. One thing I did notice that I thought was rather interesting about Oregon, whenever I think of Oregon, I tend to think of the Pinot Noir. Oregon, in my opinion, makes some just absolutely phenomenal Pinot Noirs. And that is one of the top grapes, but they also grow a lot of Pinot Gris. Those are the top two grapes grown in Oregon, the Pinot Noir and Pinot Gris, although their list of grapes grown in the area is extremely long. They've got the microclimates and areas that they can grow just about anything that you can imagine in there. It's amazing all the different varieties. Vineyards consist of about 14,100 acres in the state, and it's probably a little bit more than that now. Again, the reference here is a little bit older, or 15 square kilometers, or 57 square kilometers. It is Oregon located, for those of you who aren't familiar, who might be listening to us overseas, Oregon is located in the northwestern part of the state, surrounded by Idaho on the east, Washington on the north, and California on the south. Think of Oregon's lot, a pretty wet climate, but actually because of the microclimates there, it isn't as wet as we normally think it would be. Let me check here. Do we have, as Mike called?
You ready?
Yeah, if you want to go ahead and try to get a hold of her, then we will get her on. I told her it'd be about this time, so let's get her on the air. We are going to be in Southern Oregon, Southern Oregon Appalachian and Sub-Appalachians, Umbugua Valley, established in 1984, Red Douglas County, 2005, AVAs. The Rogue County, Rogue Valley AVA, established in 1991, and the Applegate Valley AVA within that is established in 2001. So these are really the AVAs have been there for quite some time. Great varieties in these areas are, again, a long list. I'm not going to even attempt to go through them all. There are more than 3,000 vineyard acres in Southern Oregon AVA, numerous varieties. There are over 70 wineries. I'm looking at a newer list here, and I think this might be up to date because this is the Southern Oregon Appalachian website, and they're saying that it's over 70 wineries in this area now. Flatland areas, mountains, and all that stuff. So we have a guest tonight. Agreed to join us. Her name is Portia Schiller. She is the marketing manager, event marketing manager from South Stage Cellars at Quail Run Vineyards. We talk a little bit, and she goes, don't ask me questions about the vineyards, and don't ask me questions about making wine. She said, but I can tell you everything else. So I said, no problem. That's what we want to know, everything else. So let's bring Portia on here and let her tell us about everything else. You with me, Portia?
I sure am, and well said. Thank you, Ron.
I'm sure you heard me introduce you.
I did.
So, tell us about the winery.
Okay, so South Stage Cellars is a very interesting winery. We're really unique in as far as the profile to most wineries. I'd like to start out with Don Trouty and Michael Moore. They are actually the owners. And a fun, quick story I'd like to talk to you about is how they even came about to come to Oregon. Don Moore was a physician, actually a pretty well-known physician in Pasadena. And his wife, Trouty, was also in the medical field, and they loved farming. And that was their zen, and their anytime they got away, they would farm. And they actually had some property in California. And they kept on hearing about the Northwest maybe about 29 years ago. So they decided to take a drive, and on their way, now you have to remember where Southern Oregon is pretty safe and pretty serene. Many people think of it as almost like a Rockwell picture where hardly any crime and amazing climate most of the time. And as they were driving through to visit this area, their car got broken into, which was interesting. And they had to pause for about 3 or 4 days in Ashland. And Ashland, Oregon is known for many things, including the Shakespearean Festival, as being one of the largest festivals in the United States. And while they were waiting for their car to be repaired, actually the window to be repaired, someone said, well, why don't you look around for some property? And they said, no, we're not really that interested. And a realtor convinced them to look at a house that had maybe about 5 acres of grapes on it, and they bought it. And now, today, they are, 27 years later, they are the largest vineyards in Southern Oregon.
Wow.
Their main position that they take, actually, is that they sell grapes to about 30 different winemakers all over Oregon.
Wow.
So,
well, I told you I was going to ask you this, but I got to. Do you know what grapes they grow?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Actually, 28 different varietals, so I'll probably bore you if I name all of them. But Roussan, Marsan, Carmenere. I'm starting off with some of the unique ones.
You have Carmenere.
Pinot Noir.
Let me interrupt. Do you make a Carmenere wine there?
Oh, yes. 100% Carmenere.
Ooh, I love Carmenere.
Yes, the lost grape. It's amazing. A lot of people think it's only found in South America, which is clearly not correct. But we do make a Carmenere. We make an Albarino, Syrah, Tempranillo, Cap Franc, Chardonnays, Viognier. Viognier is very strong, not only for us, but in the whole valley, because the soil, and this is probably the most I know about it, but there's a lot of quartz in the soil that we have here. And if you look at that Viognier grape from the south of France, it had a lot of quartz where it was grown.
Wow.
Original. They do, as I said, 28 different varietals. And Don and Trouty are kind of known as the pioneers of this area because they always dedicated maybe about 9 acres to experimenting with, farming with different grapes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have taken that lead when they see how successful they are with certain varietals. So very well respected, really lovely people. And Trouty, at the young age of 74, I believe, decided to open up a very unique tasting room. And that inspiration came from every time she would look around and see all the winemakers purchasing her grapes. She saw how many awards were being won. And she thought, wouldn't it be interesting if we opened up a winery with everyone who actually uses our grapes, and we can showcase our wines in this tasting room.
Cool.
And that's exactly what they did. So when you walk into our tasting room, we do have South State Cellars label, which just opened up about 4 years ago, and it has taken best to show, gold, double gold, not only in this area, but actually in the Single Lakes competition as well. And if you go into this tasting room, you'll see all these different labels. The one thing they have in common, it's from all of Rogue Valley grapes.
Wow.
Interesting, huh?
That's cool. That really is. That's a really interesting thing to do. That's a good idea, too, for them to do that. So everyone that uses your grapes then, has their wine in the tasting room there. That is a good idea. I like that. I really do. How many, you say 30 different wineries?
30 different wineries use our grapes. We actually rotate about 14 of them at a time. Uh-huh. Now, the only rule that we do have is that it has to be 100% of the Moore's grapes. The actual company is called Quail Run Vineyards. So there are many wineries that do have a certain percentage of, use a certain percentage of our grapes.
Uh-huh.
But for us to showcase that winemaker in our tasting room, it has to be 100%.
Oh. So that's really a great idea. I like that. You mentioned a little bit about the soil. Do you know anything about the soil in the area there that you're growing?
No, not much. I do know that we have many different microclimates.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that the Pinot Noir is kind of the, it comes from the Willamette area, and actually we are growing Pinot Noir as well. And for instance, when the north part of the northern part of the state, when they do have a challenging year, which has been a few lately, we supplement the Pinot Noir. So many people look at Pinot Noir as only being a northern Oregon grape, and in actuality, we are growing and rocking some amazing Pinot Noirs that are winning substantial awards.
Wow. It sounds interesting. I mean, exciting even. What you say challenges, obviously weather challenges. Tell us about the weather in the vineyards in that area there.
Well, in this area, again, we have all these different microclimates, which allows us to grow so many different varietals. And we do have certain mountain ranges, and we have obviously influenced by the ocean. And so in the territories that we grow grapes, they're not contiguous, but that actually allows us to really take advantage of the microclimates in the area. The weather to some has been very challenging. To us, it actually has been fantastic. We've had one of the best crops that we've had probably within a few years. A lot of people were very concerned because we did have a late spring and an early winter. But the way that Michael Moore manages the vineyards and his knowledge about growing grapes, he was really able to get the sugar levels up to where they needed to be. He was able to pull a lot of the leaves off so they, you know, got the sun that they needed and they didn't get sunburn at all, to slowly condition them to be exposed to the sun. And we had a bountiful crop. It was pretty amazing. And I'm not 100% sure, but I do believe that up north was affected by, again, the early frost.
Yeah, I have read stuff that the northern part of the state there in Oregon was seriously affected by a lot of the frost. Over the last 2 or 3 years, it's been affecting them, it seems.
Yes. And that's where we're supplementing some of their varietals. You know, the Pinot Noir, as you know, I'm sure a million times better than I, it's a very thin-skinned grape, so it is very vulnerable to certain conditions. I was just reading up on the Pinot Noir, and I don't know who quoted this, but it is a very sensitive grape to grow, and someone said, God made Cabernet Sauvignon, and the devil made Pinot Noir.
Yeah, I know. The thing is, the Pinot Noir is such a delicious grape, and it is so difficult in some areas because it's so temperamental with a thin skin and the conditions of it. But, boy, I tell you, Oregon has got such a reputation for that, and Argentina. If anybody asks me about Pinot Noir, I tell them first, Oregon and then Argentina, and you can't go wrong, you know.
It really is an amazing wine when they get it right.
Yes, yeah. And but you know, the sad thing is there's quite a few of them that get it wrong though, so you know, we can't always say it's great, you know. But Oregon does a good job on it. What your vineyards are located, how many total acres and where are they located?
We start in Ashland, which is basically, actually not in Ashland, we start in Talent, which is the next town over Ashland. So if you look at the California border, Ashland is the first town from California to Oregon. So we're pretty close to the California border. We start in a town called Talent, and actually Quail Run Vineyard or Quail Run Road is the house. And those acres that I had mentioned to you earlier is why they call it Quail Run Vineyards. Uh-huh. We spill on to the next town, which is called Phoenix. And this is all Rogue Valley. There's you know, the Apple Valley and there's Bear Creek Valley. This is all Rogue Valley. And then we, again, it's not contiguous, so we take advantage of all the best soils and the best growing conditions. Then we also run into Jacksonville, which is one of the historic towns in this area, and then we touch Medford. So we have about 300 acres. We are considered the largest in the Southern Oregon. And I do believe we do grow the most varietals, a variety of varietals. Say that quickly.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at your wine list here, and there is quite a few different ones that you all make there. It just seems like You don't have to worry about bringing other people into the into your tasting room because you've got so many different ones you do yourselves.
Well, actually, we don't. We are not winemakers at all. And that allows us to select the winemakers that do the best in certain varietals. So it's really interesting. We're sitting in a really wonderful position. There's a gentleman that many people are aware of. His name is Joe Dobbs, and he is actually the success story of Oregon, and he has his vineyards in up near Willamette. He makes amazing wine, and so we have him making a lot of wine, as well as a woman named Linda Donovan, who is another stunning winemaker, and she actually makes her wine right here in Southern Oregon. And then we have some other winemakers. So we're not winemakers at all, but we do, it allows us to select that winemaker that is going to work with that varietal the best. So in the 3.5 years that we have had South Stage Cellars, we have taken, again, double golds, best of shows. We just walked away with 4 medals from the World of Wine. We took best of show in gold in another competition. We took San Francisco Chronicle. We've won a bunch of awards.
Wow.
And then Finger Lakes, which was pretty important to us because we knew that we were doing, when we entered in the West Coast, we wanted to see how the East Coast would basically look at us as far as a winery.
So
we were able to, for a very young label, we're doing amazing. And then the other spectrum is that we've been growing grapes for 27 years now.
Oh, wow. I need to back up on one thing here now. Joe Dobbs is from what valley?
He's from Dundee. Vineyard.
I don't.
Yeah. So
what valley?
That is the Willamette. It's right. It's.
That. Not to interrupt you, Portia, but Willamette. You pronounce it. I've always heard, and I've always said Willamette, but it's Willamette.
Yeah, no, there's a word. I think, no, it could be my New York accent. I don't know. But no, I pretty much say if you're going to say Willamette, you say Willamette, damn it. That's the way you say it. So.
Well, no, I've heard Willamette, but Willamette, I mean, it may be the proper way to pronounce it. I don't know. That's why it caught me when you said Joe Dawes was from the Willamette Valley. And I'm going, huh?
Yeah, no, that's the way we pronounce it in this area.
Ah, okay.
It's like you say tomato, I say tomato, I guess.
Yeah.
But
I just struck me as strange because I've always heard Willamette, so the accent on the end. Yeah, so. I'm going to have to get a hold of Joe Dobbs then and see if he can't get on the program, talk to us a little bit next week on that.
He's amazing. Yeah. You'll really enjoy that conversation. He has an interesting story, which I'll let him tell you, but he's truly one of the best regarded. I mean, we're so lucky. We have so many amazing winemakers here, and this is for such a long time, we were just noted for Pinot Noir and Pinot Gris. And they're finally, New York Times just recently wrote an article about us as well, saying about Oregon, saying we are no longer Pinot Noir and Pinot Gris because of the amazing soils that we have and also, obviously, the microclimate.
Is there any wineries in the eastern part of the state?
There are.
Are there?
Yeah, there are. I don't know how they do it, but there are, and I don't know much about it.
Well,
and
I
then
just,
obviously,
yeah.
Sorry, sure. Go ahead.
I'm just curious if you knew. I don't know of any there, and I didn't think there was.
Yeah, and then when you cross over the border over there, you know that Washington is doing some amazing wine as well.
The eastern part of the state, yeah.
Yeah.
You are an events coordinator and manager for South Stage, and your email is rather interesting from all the different things that you were saying on that. I'm going to let you talk about that for a little bit.
Well, I'm a really big believer, and actually I would have to say that Southern Oregon, maybe all of Oregon, is a real big believer of trying to be cooperative with all the local businesses. We really want to help each other in a very strong way. So when we do events, and I try to think out of the box all the time, I always want to include businesses that are from the area. So I do, because we have such a vast amount of wines in South Stage cellars, it's so interesting. I will take two of the same varietals, but two different winemakers, and then I will pair that up with one restaurant, and then I'll pair two others up with another restaurant, and I'll pair two others up with another restaurant. So when you walk into South Stage cellars on this particular event, you're tasting six wines, three of them being the same varietals, two of them being the same varietals, but so different. And then I am pairing them with three different restaurants. So it really allows the restaurant to showcase and to have people, you know, be exposed to restaurants they haven't been. But what's so interesting is, for instance, if I take a Viognier, and we make a Viognier through Joe Dobbs makes our Viognier, and it doesn't have a sugar in it. It doesn't have any residual sugar.
Really?
The Viogniers are a little bit sweeter. But then I will take a late harvest Viognier and pair that to that same restaurant. So when you take a Viognier that is drier, and then you take another and you pair it with something, which is amazing. It pairs a late harvest Viognier pairs amazingly with blue cheeses.
Yeah.
And then you take and you can pair those two varietals. People are literally blown away, basically, because they can't believe it's even the same grape. So that happens to be a really big event that we do. It's called Oh What a Night, and it exposes, again, all these different varietals paired with the restaurants. I'm doing dark chocolate and rich red wine, and that's kind of become a semi-annual event where for some reason, again, we are known for our chocolates, I don't know if it's the air or what it is, but we make
chocolate.
Amazing chocolates.
Yeah.
So we pair our wines with our chocolates, and we also try to educate a lot. We want to give pairing and wine and cooking classes. We want to talk about the history, Jacksonville, where the actual tasting room sits. Is one of the oldest towns in this area, and actually the building that we are in is the oldest building in Jacksonville.
Oh.
And many people say there are ghosts there, and I try not to listen to them because I close up at night by myself on very dark days, but people do say that there are many ghosts walking around.
from the old... gold days and that?
Exactly. It's interesting. The place where the original building, which is that we, have our tasting room in, was built in 1857. Now, that's not documented because they didn't have the paperwork, but it originally was a law office, and it was supposed to be the county seat, which eventually moved to Salem.
Uh-huh.
In 1863 is when the gold strike happened, and the building then became a hotel.
Uh-huh.
And in researching those days, it was very easy, unfortunately, to take a life, and there was a lot of people who lost their lives over silly reasons, or life was very cheap, I should say. So people have told me, other servers have told me, that they'll be sitting in the tasting room. We do have an upstairs, and they thought that somebody was upstairs, our accountant department, rolling a chair back and forth over the room, because they heard it very clearly. And then they finally would walk upstairs, because they were confused why this person was still there, to find that no one was there.
Uh-huh.
And this happened to a few people. And some other fun little stories, which, again, I try not to marinate on too much.
Well, you know, it's part of the history of that area, though, so you can't... you can't ignore it. It's there, and so.
No, and it actually lends itself to an amazing tasting room. You walk in, and there's two fireplaces, and the original bricks, and the wood floor, and it's exactly what it's supposed to be. It had been many different businesses, but this seems to be such a amazing pairing between, no pun intended, between the building and the tasting room.
Wow, that sounds like a great place up there. That really is. Sounds fantastic. I was looking at your website a little bit here too, and when we were talking about weather, and you were talking about how the weather right there in Jacksonville, where the tasting room is, what's your high temperatures and low temperatures every year, summer, winter?
Interesting that you would ask that. As I mentioned, I lived in Ashland, which is literally probably about not even 30 miles away, and there is a huge difference between Ashland and Jacksonville.
That much?
It doesn't snow where it will snow in Ashland. So I'm saying that, I mean, it's at night in the winter, and unfortunately, we're not having a typical winter. It still hasn't snowed yet, but it probably gets to about 32, maybe. And then the high probably gets to about, on really hot days, probably the high 80s, high 90s, where in Ashland, it will go as high as a few days of over 100, and it clearly goes way below the freezing temperature here. And it's interesting because I live in Ashland, I work in Jacksonville, I get in my car, and I feel like I'm the mailman, because I'm going through all these different terrains of rain and snow and sun at times on a given day, and I'm just 30 miles from my home. But it's really interesting how it'll rain for a minute and then it'll be sunny, and then it'll snow, and then it will freeze, and so on.
Well, it's all right there in the valley, though. I mean, you're not doing any elevation, are you?
No. Well, Ashland is higher, but no, it is right. It is the Rogue Valley.
Wow, that is really, really odd that it would change that much. It didn't seem like it should or would, you know.
No, you would think that. I mean, there's an expression here: if you don't like the weather, give it 5 minutes.
And that's all it takes. Just 5 minutes.
Exactly.
Wow, so the vineyards being stretched out through the valley like that, they are really getting a bunch of microclimates that are quite distinct then.
Exactly. I mean, when you look at a Pinot Noir, or you look at a Cab Franc, or look at Syrahs and Tempranillos, I mean, they love that heat and they want that heat. Look at our early Muscats. So it's pretty interesting how successful we are on the grapes that are growing in Spain, as well as south of France. Many people say that we have the same latitude and longitude as the south of France. So if it's, a Rhone grape, that's why we could grow those grapes so well in this area.
But it would seem like the mountains on both sides of you would really affect that. I mean, being the same latitude is great, the same, but still the mountains are have to give you all sorts of fits as far as microclimates go.
Right, right, and they do. They do. I'm trying to think of a grape that we don't grow. You know, in one of our wines, we have Dolcetto, Grenache, Syrah, Merlot, Touche Viognier. In another one, we have, and these are just, I mean, people think about Albarino. I mean, you know, that's a unique grape. Carmenere, as you agreed, very interesting grape. And we're actually keep on planting grapes that are new to this area to see how they grow, and we're getting a tremendous amount of success.
That's just amazing. It really is. You mentioned something that you're from New York. Is that where you got your original training? Are you? Why are you in Oregon if you are from New York? What happened?
You know what, Ron? I do ask that every day. No, this area is amazing, actually. We wanted to bring our children up here in a calmer area. I actually went from New York to San Diego, and then from San Diego to this area. The only reason how my background is marketing, and it was just something that I had fallen into. I really don't have that much experience with wine except drinking some amazing wine in my life. And I started gravitating towards some of the people that worked in the tasting room, and they found out about my background, and then it became a really beautiful partnership. Not a partnership in the business, but a good marriage between us.
Right. So, well, that's great. That sounds wonderful on that. I just you did mention New York, and I just want to know, you know, I mean, Oregon, New York, it doesn't have much of
I know. Actually, people from New York call it Oregon.
Yeah, it's Oregon.
It's just something that Ashland and Jacksonville are just amazing towns. They're small, but because of the tourism, they have so many wonderful businesses that support thousands and thousands of people that come in through this area. So they have fantastic restaurants. We have an amazing museum called Science Works that a lot of people are not even aware of that is great for children and adults. We have, you know, our wineries are becoming so, getting so much attention now because we are making such amazing wines here that is becoming huge. You probably heard, I'm sure, of the Applegate and the Apple Valley, and that's been really well received. The Applegate Valley has amazing wineries there. So a lot of people from California are moving in this direction because of the changes that are going with the weather. And a lot of California winemakers, and I don't know that in particular, but what I understand is some winemakers are putting, you know, are setting up shop here from California because they're seeing where the weather pattern is going to be and where it's going.
Global warming. I've talked about this. Global warming, certain grapes have certain temperatures and certain growing days and all that. And the way global warming is working, I've told people this for the last 15 years, that by 2050, the Southern Oregon area, your area, is going to be the next Napa Valley because it's going to be too warm in Napa to grow the Cabernets and to grow a lot of these grapes that they're growing there now.
That's what I understand too. I also have to say that I just took a trip to Napa Valley and their wines are absolutely amazing. California wines really are great, but I agree with you. This is where a lot of people are pointing to, and the amount of wineries that are opening up are tremendous. I mean, we used to have pears all from Harry and David, which is a huge pear grower, as many people might know.
Oh, really?
And,
I didn't know that was.
Yeah, and they're being replaced with vineyards. And
wow.
It's stunning. I mean, the scenery is amazing. You know, driving to work, as I mentioned, it's about a 30-minute drive. You go through all these rolling hills and all these fantastic vineyards. And one of the things that I like to do with my events, if you don't mind me going back to that for a second, is artists. I love to incorporate artists. And there's this woman in particular named Cheryl Garcia that has we had a talk with her when I first started, and she is a metal sculpture artist, and she takes reclaimed steel and makes this amazing art out of it. So in our vineyards, we have maybe 12 and 20-foot poppies that she had made with these brilliant, beautiful autumn colors. And you almost feel like you're in a scene in Alice in Wonderland, because you'll see these vineyards and then you'll see these tremendous metal, beautiful sculpture of poppies in the vineyards. And it claims a lot of attention, as you can imagine.
Huh.
But she has her art all over our tasting room now in the backyard, and she's really becoming popular, actually. I think she just won Best Artist of Southern Oregon. So,
wow, quite a coup for her, and for you to get her to do stuff for you there like that.
Well, that's what I think it's all about, Ron. We, you know, personally, we try to support everybody that's around us. I mean, obviously, we're importing, exporting, and, you know, the wine that's going into China now is a whole new discovery, you know, maybe not too new any longer. But I was actually just talking to someone in China today. And, you know, do we want to go in that direction? I'm not sure. But the main thing is, while, you know, right now we're trying to support our community and hoping that they support us. And it's working. It's a really great relationship with all the stores and the artists. And we have poetry readers that come in and people who have written books that are bestsellers. And no one really knows that they're actually living right behind us somewhere in the vineyards. So it's a very interesting place.
It sounds fascinating. Mike, do you have any questions for Portia here?
Yeah, I don't know if you have information on this, but do you have or do you participate in any wine trails in that area?
Yes. Yes. And you know what, the names are actually, yeah, but yes, we do, and I don't know why it's escaping me, but there's, and yeah, I'm sorry, I don't have the information.
I told you I want to ask you that.
No, I know, I was doing fine with you, and now you're kind of, okay, Mike, ask me another question.
let me go through my sheets again, let's see, ship out of state? Do you have any shipping problems or anything, or is it, you just try to sell locally in the state?
So that's a great question. The wine that we actually produce under the label South Stage Cellars is small quantities, where we really try to keep it in a certain amount, a certain circumference around the tasting room. What we do have is a wine club, which is growing faster than you can even imagine. And one of the reasons is that when you do become a wine club member, you're always getting someone else's wine besides South Stage Cellars. As I mentioned, we carry so many other winemakers. So our wine club lives mostly in the United States and some people outside of the United States. So we ship everywhere that we're allowed to ship. As far as distribution, I'm basically the wholesaler. I do the events, marketing, and I do the wholesaling. And at this time, right now, we are just keeping the wine in Southern Oregon.
Uh-huh. Okay. Is there a reason, just the fact that you don't want to be overwhelmed, or is it laws or something?
No laws. No laws at all. We wanted to see how this goes. You know, this is a kind of a new venture in you know, the comparison to other tasting rooms. We've been open a little bit over 3.5, almost 4 years, and we are amazed at the success rate that we have had. So we just want to do it right. And as our label becomes stronger, we will start increasing our production. But truly, at this point, the majority of, I think it's like 93% of what we do is sell grapes to other winemakers.
Wow. That's a lot. That, you know, a big number there. The ones you do make, are you doing both stainless steel and oak and the whole bit, everything?
Exactly. Yeah. Stainless steel, we do oak, French oak most of the time, neutral oak. You know, the Chardonnays have that tendency not to be. I love that buttery, oaky Chardonnay, and it seems not to be as popular, so it's toning down. So we'll use more of a neutral oak for a Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, but we love French oak, sometimes American oak, but not often at all, and steel.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've talked to quite a few different wineries around the country, and Minnesota oak is becoming very popular.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't say I've ever had anything in Minnesota oak, but I've had a lot of wineries tell me that they were using Minnesota oak, and they're absolutely enthralled by the possibilities and what they're getting from that. So,
how wonderful. And it's local in comparison, isn't it? So
yes. I mean, you know, shipping and everything has to be cheaper. So, yeah, as opposed to French. Yeah. Anything else, Mike?
I'm good here. We just get contact information and everything, and go from there. Yeah, everything's
okay.
Good.
Well, Portia, absolutely fantastic. You said you didn't know too much, and you surprised all of us by all the knowledge.
Oh, yeah, very good.
I don't know about that. You're kind.
Except for Mike's question. He put you on the spot. But,
Okay.
But otherwise, you did well. If you would like to give us all the information about South Sage Cellars, the address, the phone number, the website, the Facebook page, the tweet, if you do tweets, everything, all the information. So any listeners out there would like to get in touch with you, or if they're in the area would like to stop by, they have all the information.
Okay, great. I will. So it's South Stage Cellars. The actual address, if you want to visit the tasting room, is 125 South 3rd Street, in Jacksonville, Oregon, 97530. If for some reason you want to mail something to us, it's South Stage Cellars, and it's P.O. Box 1323, Jacksonville, Oregon, 97530. Our tasting room number is 541-899-9120. Our Facebook page is under South Stage Cellars, and it's really fun. I actually write fun stories about some of the ghosts that people talk about and many other things.
Cool.
And Twitter is also South Stage. And let's see. And our website is www.southstagecellars.com.
Fantastic. Well, really, thank you very much for being able to join us tonight. You were really quite informative. It was great to hear the stories and all about South Stage Cellars. An exciting winery and a lot of information, too. I knew Oregon was going to be exciting when we started to talk about it, but you got us off to a fantastic start here, and we really appreciate that.
Thank you so much, Ron and Mike, and Happy New Year to everybody.
No.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Happy New Year to you,
too.
Thank you.
Okay.
Right. Bye-bye. Bye now.
Bye. All righty. Very cool.
I just the same thing you were just going to say. Very informative. She's very good.
Oh yeah.
A lot of information there. That was fantastic.
Plenty of information. I mean, that really really got us to a great start on Oregon with quite a bit there. So very cool.
That area of Oregon too. I'm amazed. I really have to say, you know, because whenever we hear about Oregon, I think most people think about Willamette Valley or Willamette or Eight Valley. As you pronounce it. Most people think of that part of Oregon, but I don't think a lot of people really consider the southern Oregon and that area right down there by the border, just north of California. And it's really was quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's like a surprise. Wasn't expecting that, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Kind of took us off guard, but very cool. And unless you have... I don't know if you have other post-show interview things to we can discuss, or we can talk about next Thursday and what we're going to. Well, we're going to continue with Oregon, of course. So,
all right,
there's plenty there.
Let me while we're in Southern Oregon, and she mentioned it, I want to bring this up too. There's a Southern Oregon is the I should have asked her how to pronounce this. Umpqua Valley, U-M-P-Q-U-A, Umpqua Valley, established in 1984. The Red Hill Douglas County, which is part of Umpqua Valley, established in 2005, that AVA. The Rogue Valley established in 1991, which also encompasses the Applegate Valley AVA. And she mentioned the Applegate Valley. And I just wanted to bring it up and let people know the Applegate Valley AVA was established in 2001. And these all lie within the borders of the new Southern Oregon AVA area, which is over 2 million acres, an Appalachian in Southern Oregon there. So it's a big area there. And like she said, they a lot of acreage. The total acreage in this area, too, this is the most current numbers I have on it, but the total AVA acreage, not this isn't the vineyards, but total AVA acreage is over 2 million acres, actually 2,001,782 acres, and there's over 1,300 acres of vineyards planted in that area. So
it is
really a booming area now, over 70 wineries in the area. And she mentioned some of the wines, and she could have kept going and mentioned quite a few more. There's the grapes that are grown in that area are just phenomenal. So, yeah, it's a
definitely
interesting area.
Oh yeah, and I didn't realize there was that much in Oregon. That's for sure.
I didn't either. I just like I said, I'm always thinking of the Willamette Valley, and I don't consider that. So,
yeah, Willamette. First name, last name.
If you're listening, Portia, we're not making fun of you. We're just laughing at
you. No. I didn't notice an accident. I mean,
I didn't either.
If it's in there, it must have been very subtle, but I didn't catch it. The pronunciation is, like, who knows if they would know how to say Apalachicola. They may say something else.
Very true. Very true.
Well, we can throw that right back at them.
Or Kissimmee. I mean, there's another one.
Kissimmee. There you go.
Yeah.
Kissimmee. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Okay. So really cool. We have we will continue on with the state of Oregon next week. Is that particular region area, or
we might stay. If I can get a hold of this professor from Southern Oregon University, I'm going to try to get a hold of him and see if he can't join us. If he can, it will. I really hope I can get a hold of him, because he is the information I read on the website about him is just he would really be quite informative. He's written so many papers and so many things. It's just I would love to be able to talk with him. So I'll try to get a hold of him this week. I'll send him an email and then follow up with a phone call a couple of times and be sure. Right. the time difference. And, you know, I tell people we're going to call at 7. They go, oh, okay. And then I say, wait a minute. No, that's 4:30 or 4 o'clock your time. So, so they go, oh, wow. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'll be at work then, but yeah, okay.
yeah.
Wow, okay. No. Well, I guess we will finish up here, wrap it up for this evening, and thank everybody for, you know, joining us on the first show of 2012. Do you say 2012 or 2012?
I say 2012 because it was 19 and now it's 20.
Oh, I got you.
Huh. We didn't say 1998. We said 1990.
That's true. That's true. So, and I keep doing 2012.
So I always say 2012 and, you know, 2011, well, 2010.
Did you say 2005 or did you say 2005?
I did both, and people always looked at me funny, but I did both. Yeah.
Okay.
But I figured, right, yeah, if it was 1968, then it has to be 2012. You know, not.
Yeah. Okay. I see how that goes. I don't know why. I just
think anyway. Yeah. You know, so
I default to calling it a number like 2012. So that's one of those things. Well, anyway, great show this evening for the first of the year, whichever way you say it. And thank
yeah,
you
right.
to everybody listening to us live, which we're still going, and also in the archives. Thank you for tuning in there. Let's see. Ron is actually our main affiliation. There is Florida Estates Winery. Wow. You know, I thought I was going to come up with the ending thing over the first of the year, and I haven't done it because I got the beginning part.
We can just say bye and just cut it off. Yeah.
Yep. Thank you for listening. Have a good one.
Boom. That's it. Quick.
Yeah, but I want to get this in there. Let's see. Florida Estates Winery, located in Land O'Lakes, Florida, off of State Road 52. It's 25241 State Road 52. That's you go up Interstate 75 or down Interstate 75, catch exit 285 and go west about 4 miles, and you'll see the signs leading to Florida Estates Winery. Or you can get there from U.S. 41 Suncoast Parkway or U.S. 19. Make your way up to State Road 52 and go east. And at various degrees. Before you get to I-75, you'll see it on the left-hand side, some signs there. And anyway, open daily. Unbelievable. The winery is open daily from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. You do tastings and retail sales. You have a great gift shop there with plenty of cool supplies and everything, and everything for your wine needs and gift needs. If you have groups of over 12 people, make sure you make reservations. Call them ahead of time. Also, there's a large area outside in the back with it's a great shade of it's a canopy of oak trees, and it's just great. Most major credit cards are accepted. Closed major holidays, which I don't think we have anything coming up.
4th of July,
just
I think
yet.
The next one. Oh,
4th
Easter.
Of July. Wow. So you're working. Wow. Okay.
You got Easter and then 4th of July.
Okay. There you go. So every day except then. Picnics are welcome as well. Bring your family. It's family-friendly, pet-friendly. And give them a call, 813-996-2113. The phone number again is 813-996-2113. You can email Florida Estates Winery. At their email address is CORP, that's corp, at flewn.com, corp at FLEWN.com. And for more information, as always, visit the website, www.floridaestateswines.com. That's floridaestateswines.com. You can, as far as the show goes, you can follow the show on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. It's All About Wine BTR. The BTR stands for, of course, Blog Talk Radio. So go to Facebook, like us on there, and we want to see how many people we can get on there by this time next year. So,
yes.
Yes.
Like to increase our Facebook coverage there.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. And Ron's posting information there about upcoming shows and guests and everything on the Facebook page, and it's great. And you can follow everything on there as well. If you have questions or feedback, comments, or anything, or something you'd like to hear on a future show, you can email Ron gets this as well. It's allaboutwine101@gmail.com. That's allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And emails will be answered either by email or, of course, by using it on the air, depending on what the content is. So check it out. There's all kinds of ways to get in touch with the show. And thank you all for listening. We will be back next week, which is January the 12th, 2012. We will continue with 2012. We will continue with the State of Oregon at some capacity. And just stay tuned to the, you know, the best way to find out about guests and everything is to stay tuned to the Facebook page. You know, we let you know there.
We can't forget your tweets, too. Mike also tweets. So
I tweet stuff on there. But, you can do that. It's Mike Twitter. It's twitter.com/MikeWCFL. C as in cat, FL as in Uruguay or whatever it is. So
Uruguay. F as in elephant.
Yes, FL as in elephant. There you go. So in some ways, just you know, we'll keep you informed on what the show's doing. Also, whenever we, you know, put a show on Blog Talk Radio and schedule it, you'll see information on there as well. But sometimes I don't have the guest on there right away. But you'll know when our next shows are. Just stay with us on Blog Talk Radio / All About Wine. There you go. Yep. blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. So there you go. All right. Thank you all for listening. And we'll
thank
you
all for listening. Appreciate it.
January 12th. Thanks a lot, and have a good rest of the week.
See you all next week.
All right.